Hello, welcome to Sage Reverie. Today we are talking about the Enneagram, so stick around. Welcome to Sage Reverie, a podcast where we seek to live well and live wisely. I'm Mike Wilson.
And I'm Wes Smith.
We live in the great state of Wyoming, and each week, from a biblical perspective, we discuss a trending topic and what others are saying about it. If you're using these episodes for your group, there are discussion questions in the description. And for more information about our ministry, visit church307.com. Today we have a guest with us that some of you know, some of you do not. CJ Ward, thanks for joining us, CJ.
Absolutely, thanks for letting me.
Yeah, he is a fan of the Enneagram.
I am.
And I believe it's satanic. No, I'm just kidding.
It's going to be a different kind of podcast than I thought.
We're going to argue the whole time. No, you've talked in the past about how important it is for Christians to take a look within and kind of have an understanding of what motivates us and and what's important in terms of what we wrestle with.
Yeah.
And so you've used the Enneagram as a tool to help you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people talk about, no, it's too selfish to look within or to think too much about your own personal motivations and what motivates you in life, what's your response to them?
Yeah, that's a great question. My answer would be that if we're not examining our inner world, then we don't recognize how we're treating other people. You know, the goal of looking inward, noticing my motivations, is actually to become more selfless. It's to be able to love and serve without subconsciously looking for my own affirmation or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. A lot of times our reactions are driven by things we don't even realize.
Yeah.
You know, I become unkind, reserved, withholding, selfish, whatever. And if I don't ask why, then I'll never be able to overcome it.
Yeah, we all know people who go through life just kind of angry or bitter, resenting things. And unless they wrestle with kind of the core motivations for those things, then it just is going to rip their world apart, their families apart.
So it's
helpful to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things for us to do here at the beginning is to reflect on if it's okay to even use the Enneagram. I know many people, some of my close friends, would say that the Enneagram is satanic and it's not something that we should be using as a tool. I did some research. I know you guys have done a lot more research than I have on this topic, but I did some research into it. And the most helpful video I found on the topic was this one. So I'm going to play it for you so we can get on the same page.
So at the conference, I told them I had made up this tale that all this came from millennia ago.
From
the disinformation came from the Sufis.
Yes.
I told him that actually Oscar Richardson had not described any of the Enneatypes either. Actually, in the 7 months we spent with him, he devoted about 6 hours to talk about the Enneagram, but he never came to describe any one of the types.
That came from Enrique Chile,
yeah.
Yeah.
So that came from my own observations, but mostly from automatic writing. It came to me from automatic writing.
What did?
The specific information.
And it's Enneatypes.
About Enneatypes, which I then verified through observation, because I was surrounded by people I was teaching and exploring with.
So that's Oscar Ichazo saying that he received the Enneatypes, is what he called them, through automatic writings. So this isn't his mind. This is some spirit or something. What's your initial knee-jerk reaction to hearing that?
That's just weird. This is the first time I have not done a lot of research. I love the Enneagram, the learning from it, but just watching that interview, this is new to me. So I just find it weird. I'm still reflecting as we are producing this podcast,
I have a hard time trusting anything that guy says.
Yes. I'm reevaluating my own perception of the Enneagram right now.
One thing, I did read some comments on this interview, and a lot of people say, yes, he did. He called it the Enneatypes, and he kind of wrote down the types, but it was his students that kind of developed the methodology and developed these types into more of what we think of when we think of the Enneagram. And he didn't kind of design all the wings and all that stuff. That was, he just came up with the types. Others kind of developed the whole concept. Have you looked into this much and have thoughts?
Yeah, a little bit. And there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. First off, what did he mean when he said automatic writing? Right. Yeah. There are people who say what he meant was just stream of consciousness writing, which anybody who does creative writing, right. you use that. And it's basically just trying to not overthink it and just kind of let, you know, what's natural come out. So some people hear that and they think, oh, he turned himself over to a demon. And some people hear that and they think, oh, he was just like kind of flow of consciousness. And then later he was like, whoa, I think there's something to this. I should observe and see if it's accurate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one of the possible answers, but there are a lot of answers.
Yeah. I've always just fallen on the side of, I don't really care where it came from.
Right.
No.
Like if it was a witch that discovered math, we wouldn't say, well, we're not going to use math because a witch discovered it.
Yeah.
Be like, okay, but it's still math. It's still helpful. I can still use it in life.
Yeah.
And so who discovered it or who developed it and all that stuff. I believe that God can redeem anything. Mm-hmm. If God can use the Apostle Paul, then I think I'm going to trust that God can use anything created by anybody for with any motivation or with any idea. And so if he wants to use the Enneagram, I'm totally cool with it.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit more about how Enneagram can be helpful or how it's been helpful to you in the past.
Well, from my perspective, as a leader, it's certainly been helpful. More so as a married, as a husband, it's been enormously helpful. And as a dad, it's been enormously helpful. Mm-hmm. But certainly as a leader, you know, or you need to understand the people that you work with for, who work for you, in terms of where they're at. Not just the Enneagram, Lencioni's work styles. There's a whole bunch of tools that you should use to really understand those around you and how you're interacting with them. And this is just one of them.
Yeah.
And like you, where it came from, how many hands have been in the pot to kind of put that together, all that is not something that concerns me too much. I mean, I do think there are things in our world that we should avoid because they appear to be, you know, their practices or their whatever, that tools that maybe Satan uses more than other things.
Yep.
But I don't, you know, these personality kinds of things, work style kind of thing, I don't think we can redeem those extremely well. So it's been very helpful. Marriage is where it's been most helpful for me, but yeah. In all kinds of horse training, it's been helpful for me. I mean, right. It's just 100 areas where.
How is it helpful in horse training?
You know, understanding how I handle frustration.
Most of
training is a combination of competence and patience. Almost all training is that way. Leadership is that way, but training is that way. Mm-hmm. And to understand how you process and experience and then communicate frustration is super helpful in whatever field you're in. So yeah, it's been helpful. So
you're training yourself as much as you're training the
Absolutely.
horse.
Absolutely. Like, okay, I don't know, we're going to get to this today, but in horse training, they often say it has as much to do about you internally as it does the animal, right? Wow. And so understanding self-awareness is important in any endeavor, but it's particularly training. You have to understand, here's how I naturally react to this wrong choice on the part of the horse and how I naturally respond and how that tends to make it worse. And I have to correct that. So I give reward at the right time and negative in a reinforcement at the right time. Huh. So it's parenting.
Yeah.
It's marriage. It's the whole thing, right? I got to understand that. And any tool that can be helpful to do that is powerful.
Yeah. I mean, you could take everything you just said and apply it to my parenting, like the lessons I've learned about parenting. Yeah. And that's so true.
Yeah. I'm trying to help you correct those things.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We can, but I just, yeah, absolutely. And that, the Enneagram is one of the most powerful. My wife and I had, what was it? I'm not sure I got permission from her to share this, but I think we had a couple of weeks where we really weren't talking much after exploring the Enneagram because it exposed some stuff, right? And this, it was powerful.
Yeah. What about you in terms of like benefits of how it's helped you?
Yeah, it's been huge. I would say, honestly, I don't think this is an exaggeration, that apart from just scripture and mentors, the Enneagram has been the most helpful thing for me in my discipleship. Just in terms of, the Enneagram isn't magic. The Enneagram helps you learn to notice things. You know, it gives you language for things. And there were things in my life that I didn't have language for, you know, that I said, I see this pattern repeat over and over again, but I can't figure out why. You know, I just see the pattern repeat, and the Enneagram helped give me language and then a faithful biblical response to that, you know, because to me, the Enneagram allows me space to then say, what does Jesus say?
Yeah.
You know, in response to what, you know, the Enneagram points out about my personality. So it's been huge.
So talk more about what the Enneagram does tell a person. So if I find out I am a specific type,
yeah,
what is that type revealing about me? Is it motivations, or is it personality? Is it?
Yeah. So the Enneagram is not a personality type in the traditional sense. It's not like Myers-Briggs that's going to tell you, you know, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert. So you can find people who are a different type, who are all kinds of different personality types. You know, I'm an Enneagram 3. I know introverted 3s. I know extroverted 3s. I know 3s who can work a crowd. I know 3s who can't. You know, it doesn't tell you your personality. Mm-hmm. It tells you basically what are the core lies that you have believed about yourself that you have then learned to live with.
Wow.
Right? So basically the Enneagram says that there are generally 9 lies. They take different forms, lies that humans believe, that we learn to accommodate. And then, we learn to live with those things. So as a 3, the lie is you are loved when you perform well, when you're valuable. Right. So I learned at a young age, and it's worth saying that all of our parents are not God. So we don't have to have bad parents to be wounded by our parents. Yeah. You know, they're just not God. So we all learn lies because Satan's the liar. Right. So I learned at a young age that I need to do the right thing at the right time. And that's when I'll be loved and valuable, you know, and part of that was just Satan manipulating my young mind and, you know, inserting lies at the right time, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, so I learned to do that. I learned how to become what people want me to become. I learned how to impress people, you know, and it created a lot of fear and anxiety of, you know, what do people actually think about me? What if they don't like me? It created a huge fear of failure, you know, sometimes a crippling fear of failure in me, of feeling like I have to do everything perfectly or people won't love me. They won't want me. All of those things manifested in my life, and the Enneagram gave me language for that, you know, to realize that actually at a core level, I don't have to perform to be loved. That's a lie that Satan tells me.
Yeah.
What Jesus tells me is that I am loved and I am welcome, that I am who I am and who he created me to be. And I don't have to be what other people want me to be.
Wow.
You know, so that was hugely transformative as a husband, as a dad, as a pastor. I mean, you can imagine how every area, one of the things that the first thing that I noticed about the Enneagram, my son was 3, I think, when I learned about the Enneagram. And I started noticing that I parented him in public different than I parented him in private.
Oh, wow.
Because I cared so much about what people think subconsciously.
Yeah.
You know, so I noticed that and realized, no, my value doesn't come from how people think I parent him. My value comes from my Heavenly Father. And then I parent my son out of that.
Well,
you know, so I'm still not great. You know, I still notice myself sometimes thinking, who's around? I don't want to overreact, but it's given me the language to notice and then dial that back.
I want to do a whole episode on parenting in the Enneagram. Like I have not dived into that part of the Enneagram. Mm-hmm. I've just kind of let it use it like cursory level in other areas. But is Enneagram something that we're born with, or is that something that's different? It sounds like you're talking about it more as something that you develop because of the way you were raised, or?
Yeah. I'd ask the same question. What do you think?
If you want to nerd out for a minute,
yes, I do.
People who study the Enneagram have different opinions. There are people who say you're born with a propensity. It's part of your brokenness. And Christian writers.
Yeah.
So Christian writers would say this is part of the fall, you know, the sinful nature that's in you. You have a propensity towards it. So you will interpret things that way no matter what. And there are other people who say, no, this is, you know, more nurture than nature. We're all sinful. But then the experiences that we have in life will predict what number we develop into, you know? And so nobody really knows for sure. What we know is we're broken. We are born broken. We are all lied to by the enemy and the world around us. And then it forms us a specific way.
I asked that question largely because there's so many threes in my family that it makes me wonder, is that because of the way our parents raised us, or is that because of some kind of nature we inherited it from our parents or whatever? Do you see that same kind of thing in your family?
I do.
Similar?
Yeah. Yeah. As you know, I consider myself to be a three, and I'd consider most of my family to be threes.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. I probably a combination of all the above, right?
Probably true. Yeah. So, for the rest of the time, I'd kind of like to play a little bit devil's advocate, like push back on Enneagram and maybe the downsides of Enneagram and get you guys' response about like, why am I wrong in my pushback? The first one I have is kind of a pushback that I have towards a lot of different personality type, whatever you call these tests, is that it tends to give people an excuse for why they are the way they are. Like I hear, eights that I've had eights on my staff that will say, well, I'm just a jerk because I'm an eight. And it's like, that's just kind of an excuse. Mm-hmm. Or I've had sevens that say, I'm just a seven, so I'm unorganized. Mm-hmm. Sevens are unorganized, so I'm just going to live with it type thing. What do you say when people say that it is too often used as an excuse?
You know, it's not an Enneagram problem, though. It's simply a choice everybody makes every day about facing reality. And Jesus talked about that in the great parable where he has the dishonest steward, right? And the dishonest steward faces reality and he commends the dishonest steward for that. So my reaction would be, I absolutely think the Enneagram maybe better than any other type analysis that I've seen can be used as an excuse because, you know, the book, The Path Forward, is that what it's
remember? The Road Back to
Road
You.
Back to You.
Yeah.
That is so affirming in the way it presents the Enneagram. Like it's the most shepherding, compassionate, like particularly a three is a hideous thing. And yet when you read him say it, it's just like, well, you kind of feel okay about it. So I think the Enneagram, frankly, gives you naturally more leeway, or the way it's talked about, to using it as an excuse. And then we're in an era of time when we tend to say, celebrate who you are anyway. And
yes.
So you combine those things. So I would say no, it's not bad because you can use it as an excuse, but it does lend itself to using it. There's something more than Myers-Briggs that lends itself to being used as an excuse for inappropriate kind of things.
Yeah, sure.
Would you add something to that?
I mean, I would just reiterate. The only thing I would add actually is just, you said test earlier, and I want to tell anyone who's interested in the Enneagram, don't stop at the test, please.
Okay.
The tests are not designed to predict your number because no person can objectively take a test like that. Mm. We always answer the way we want to be, not how we actually are.
Sure.
So if you take a test then, and it says you might, you know, it might say you're a six wing one, and that's impossible in the Enneagram, you know?
I've heard that though.
Yeah. Same.
I say, that's actually possible.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you get that, what the test is saying is you should do some research because based on your answers, it seems like you're leaning towards a one or a six. So go find The Road Back to You, or, you know, some sort of information on the chapter. In The Road Back to You, you know, one of the things he says is that he always starts by explaining the negatives of the type. And you know it's your type when it feels like someone just read your mail.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, oh my gosh, how did anybody know that? That's how you know it's you. Because you're not identifying with how you want to be. You're identifying with what you hoped you weren't, what you are. You know, and he does say in the book, he says, if I'm getting the quote right, may I be forced to listen to Nickelback for eternity if anyone would use the Enneagram to justify their current negative behavior.
What a torture. Yeah. You said a three is a terrible thing or something like that.
It's when you define it, Yeah. And you feel exposed. I don't know if you all felt that way, but I'm like, shoot, you know, this is horrible.
Yeah.
But it was pretty obvious for me. Like, yeah, but it's totally me. Mm-hmm. And you really had to wrestle with that. So
to be totally honest with you, I've only read the first three. And the road back to you, because I got to three and I started reading. I'm like, I don't need to read anymore. I know which one I am.
Yeah.
Like it was so, it felt, it was helpful to me. Like it was healing to me to be able to see and understand why I do the things that I do. For me, so much of it is motivations. Mm-hmm. I realize how much I am motivated by my Enneagram type. Mm-hmm. And so that helps me to remember that this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I need to be careful and have pure motivations, mm-hmm. not just my natural, just fall into what my flesh naturally will lead me to, but instead follow the spirit.
Yeah.
So maybe at some point I'll read the later ones and I'll be better at remembering what other people are. But, so there are other people, this would be another pushback, and it's more, I've noticed there are some other types that hate this type of conversation. They don't want to have a conversation about what Enneagram they are. They want to have a conversation about my personality type. They don't see use in it. In fact, we have somebody on our staff who hates these things and says they're all just overgeneralization and none of those things can actually read my mail. What do you say to people who say it's just not helpful and you guys are just overly emotional and trying to look for some uplifting information to help you feel better about yourself?
Well, I mean, yeah, I obviously find that disagreeable, but before I jump on that, I do think we live in a world where there is a constant fascination with a new way to describe who I am.
Yeah.
And we'd rather do that than we would the hard work of like, how do I stop being a jerk?
Yeah.
And so I get some of that, because in my world, in my leadership world, there's always a new book coming and it always describes the new kind of company, the new kind of organization, the new kind of leader, the new kind of employee. And at some point, you know, Ecclesiastes says there's nothing really new on this, son. Come on now. Yep. This is the way it is. So I actually, I'd affirm some of that. Affirm some of that. Mm-hmm. However, obviously, we would agree that's an overgeneralization from somebody who's saying it's overgeneralization. We would say that about these kinds of things. That's over. And we have found this and others. I mentioned the Work Styles by Lindsay. Yeah. Some of these to be enormously helpful tools. Mm-hmm. And self-awareness is such a powerful first step to any transformation. The Holy Spirit uses self-awareness in powerful ways.
Yeah.
And if you put boundaries up from self-awareness, you are quenching what God would want to do in your life.
Yeah.
And that's a serious thing. Now, I don't mean that in the way that scripture uses that term, you know,
right,
unforgivable sin conversation. Yeah, that's not where I'm, but you are stifling the work that God can do in you if you are not open to honest, vulnerable self-evaluation.
Wow. Yeah.
So be careful with that. Be careful with that. I get what that person's saying. I think there's some validity to it, but be careful because you're stifling some amazing things that God could do in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My experience with the Enneagram was not that it was positive and uplifting. I was like bummed out for like a month after I figured it out, you know, cause I realized like how much of myself was built on the perception of others. Like, this sounds silly, but after I read the Enneagram, I was like, do I actually like the music I listen to? Do I actually like the clothes that I wear? Yeah. Like, am I doing all of this because I thought that this would be cool, you know, or is this actually me? And it sent me on this really uncomfortable introspective journey to say, like, who actually am I? How do I not care what people think about me so much? Like, how do I start dealing with conflict without trying to make the person like me instead of speaking truth to the person, you know, all that kind of stuff. So to someone who says, yes, it's just going to be positive, it's going to make you feel better, I would say you probably haven't read the deeper stuff about the Enneagram.
Yeah. One more pushback that comes to my mind, and it's actually the tension that I felt when we were going through it as a staff. And it's the pushback that it is overly focused on weaknesses. And maybe that was just the way in which it was facilitated with us when we were going through it. But it did seem like I'm one who says, lean into your strengths. Don't spend your entire life trying to iron out all of your weaknesses. Like, figure out what you're good at and really operate within that realm. And you can offer the most to the team. Yes, you need to pay attention to your weaknesses. You need to know what they are. But really find your strengths and operate within your strengths as often as possible. And it seems to me like the Enneagram is so focused on our weaknesses and what drags us down that maybe we can become overly focused on that rather than leaning into our strengths, where something like the Working Geniuses or the Strengths Finders or some, I don't know, love languages, that type of stuff, where it like tells me, okay, what am I good at? I really need to focus on those things that I'm good at. What would you say to that pushback?
Well, it might have just been the way you facilitated it more in terms of that specific. Well, my experience with the Enneagram comes almost completely introduced by it, by the Road Back to You, is that the name of the book? That is my primary sort of paradigm with this question. And that presentation of the Enneagram was super positive,
yeah.
Maybe too positive, right? I felt as good as you can feel about being a three, but because there's some tough stuff. I think being a three is the worst, okay?
It's just because I need that t-shirt.
I felt like, yeah, please help me, I'm a three t-shirt, right? But that presentation of it, to me, is about as positive as it could be, because there was, hey, here's some things you've gotten really good at. So no, I don't accept that at all. But that could be because maybe if I'm in a different presentation, maybe it can be more negative. Probably is the communicator in the presentation. But I would find you to be the same thing, though. Very focused on your strengths. Here's some things to be aware of. I think, you know, perception in terms of the communication, but. Yeah. No, I haven't found that to be the case.
Yeah. I mean, my thoughts would be that the Enneagram should often start somewhat negative for the simple reason that like we identify with who we want to be. When I first read The Road Back to You, I thought I was an eight because I grew up in the South watching John Wayne movies. You know what I mean? Like my perception of a man who's winning at life was you kick open the saloon doors, cock the gun, and that's what you do. You know, so that's how I wanted to be. That's how I thought of myself. Right. Mm-hmm. And then it was on a deeper dive that I was like, oh no, that whole perception is just built on what I thought I should be, not on who I actually am. You know, so it starts there just because that often helps people be authentic in how they're identifying themselves. But the deeper you get into the Enneagram, they will talk about the gifts of the Enneagram. So like as a three, you know, the lie that we believe is that we have to be valuable. We have to be impressive. Everybody has to like us. But a healthy three becomes really, really good at bringing harmony, and not being the center of attention, right? Because threes... And also in the Enneagram, they talk about like the way that we learn to cope with the lies that we believe. They become skills, right? So I learned really young to read a room and know who likes me and who doesn't, you know?
Yep.
And that's a skill set that helps me, you know? Yep. I learned how to tell a story in a way that people want to listen to it, you know? That's a skill set that helps me as a pastor. So there are strengths that come from your number, and then there are detriments to that. You know, if I tell a story to manipulate outcomes, I can also do that. That's a weakness, but I can tell a story to create unity and to serve the people, you know? So it depends on how deep you go and what your perspective is, and also whether you're trying to move into health or not, you know? Because if you're trying to move into health, then like I said, a three becomes, because you're good at reading people, you're good at empathizing and understanding, and you can help people come together without putting yourself in the middle, you know? And it becomes a strength.
Yeah, that's why so many great pastors are threes.
Yeah.
The skill set from that is
obviously all the best pastors. Oh, well,
not us, but absolutely. Some of us haven't gotten past the John Wayne part. You kind of lost me to John Wayne there for a minute, because okay. So I got some growing to do, apparently.
Hey, listen, man. True Grit and The Searchers are two of my favorite movies of all time. I watch Rio Bravo every week.
Yeah. So every week.
Every week. I will. I'd be happy to.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else you guys would like to add before we close? Did we hit it all?
I would just say, like, if somebody's listening to this and you can't get over the automatic writing thing or whatever, like, that's fine. The Enneagram isn't magic. It's not the only spiritual development tool. If your resistance is, I don't want to look inward and examine my motivations, then that's a danger. Mm-hmm. If you're stuck on, the guy who, modernized it or whatever, then that's fine. Right. Find another tool to even just in prayer and silence with the Lord, ask the Lord to show you your heart and your motivations. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Do something like that. Like, do the work to examine not just what you do and try to stop it, but ask the Lord to show you why you do it so that your heart can be changed. Because that's what it's about.
Podcast on meditation and some of this other stuff that you're talking about. Hey, take some of this and just put it before God on a daily basis and say, talk to me through this. Yeah. And let him, if there is, I just love what you're saying. If there's inconsistencies, if it's too harsh, or if it's, you're using an excuse, meditation and that process is so much more important than, let God speak in this. And if he says, hey, this doesn't apply to you or something, okay, listen, just make sure he's the first. And then all these things can be in their proper places, helpful tools, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And let's tell the world that, like, the Bible invented meditation. Yeah. The yoga teacher down the road didn't.
Right.
David wrote about meditating on the word. Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome. Yeah. CJ, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This is the last episode of the semester. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back in a couple months to do 10 more episodes. But we thank you for joining us this semester for Sage Reverie.